You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Richard Haken, today for Leonard Lopate. Well, if you live in a New York apartment where space is at a premium, it's easy to feel maybe strangled by your things. And it can be an overwhelming experience to try and declutter all of it, which is why we've called in two experts. Kristen Van Ogtrop, managing editor of Real Simple. She joins us by phone. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Richard.
And Maxwell Gillingham Ryan is the founder and CEO of ApartmentTherapy.com and author of Apartment Therapy, The 8-Step Home Cure. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Richard.
And we also want to hear from you about clutter and how you deal with it. Call us up at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or go to the show page at WNYC.org. You can also contact us through Facebook and Twitter. Well, Kristen, let's start with you. Doesn't it sometimes feel like things multiply overnight? You bring something home and before you know it, your table is all filled?
I think things do actually multiply overnight. I don't think that's ever been scientifically documented, but it's certainly true in my house and in my cluttered office that I'm currently sitting in. So, yes, it does. It does happen.
Is the big problem here is that instead of putting something where it belongs, we just kind of let it go. We drop it where it is.
Yes, and in fact, I was at a conference last year and I heard a woman speaking about something actually completely unrelated to organizing and clutter, and she said this thing that is so simple and has stuck with me since, certainly in my own home life, which is don't put it down, put it away. And I think for a lot of us, when you look at sort of the clutter surrounding you, it's because we put something down and it, for very legitimate reasons, in an effort to not have to deal with it in that moment, to make a decision about where to put it. But it's so much more satisfying to put it away.
And
it has actually changed the way I live.
What are the big things that we kind of clutter our lives with? Is it like newspapers and magazines and the bills from the mail, or is it clothing?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's such an individual thing.
It's probably all of it, right?
All of the above. I mean, I think as a society, you know, clutter in some respects is a very first world problem, right? When you look at the way many of us live, we're lucky enough to live in a place where there is abundance, you know, available to many of us. And so the temptation is just to bring in more, bring in more, bring in more, without thinking about getting rid of or giving away. And so, it depends on the individual. But I think for a lot of us, it's all of the above. It's clothes. Maybe it's not newspapers or magazines, although, you know, we would hope that you have a lot of magazines in your house.
Well, we hope you read them.
Real simple.
At least read them, right?
But, you know, it's notices from your kids' school. It is bills that need to be paid. It is plastic garbage bags that you haven't, you know, recycled. I mean, it's everything in your life.
Yeah. Maxwell, let's get to you. Do you find that there are certain types of people, no matter how big their house is, you can live in a small apartment or a really big house, you're still going to be a cluttered person?
Yes. And I want to say, also speak to what Kristen's saying, is that I think it's not just a first world problem. There's something deep in us still that is just is coming from the cavemen times, in the sense that
are we all like hoarders?
Well, yeah, because in cavemen times, in order to survive, you needed to get as much stuff into your cave as possible, and it was scary. And the person who had the most stuff was the most likely to survive, whether it's food or, you know, a spear or whatnot. And I still think, you know, even in New York City with small apartments, people are still trying to get as much stuff into their cave as they can so they don't die. And I think what we need to do is we need to realize that there's just too much stuff out there now. There's much more stuff, as Kristen said, than there ever was before. And for those of us, particularly in busy cities, the spaces are small. So they fill up really quickly. And what we need to wake up to is that we're suffocating ourselves with our stuff. And if we could get above the caveman level, we'd realize that what we really want is space and time.
And sometimes this is, I guess, a personality trait, but sometimes it feels really good to kind of cleanse your life of things and remove things, and it feels good, right?
It feels great. And they're often in couples, there's the clutter person and there's the I need to clear the slates person, and they can battle it out. And I have friends who can't have anything on their countertops. You know, it has to be squeaky clean, like unused. And I'm not saying that that is the right way to go. There's a middle ground.
So let's talk about when everything is a mess. Where do you even figure out where to start, what to throw away first, or where to put it?
Well, I think what Kristen said about don't put it down, put it away. I think when you look at your surfaces, or if you have any tension, when you walk in your front door and you have tension walking into your home, such that it's not coming home to a relaxing retreat at the end of a busy day, but it's a place that you're coming home to jobs that have been left undone, that's, you need to just look down and see what those things are. And the place to start is putting away. But the other thing that I think that helps is a wastebasket by the front door, mm-hmm. because there are things that just need to go out or be recycled right away. And then what I tell clients to do is create an outbox. And that's a space. It's not a garbage can. It's not a recycling container. It's a space that's dedicated to putting stuff that you think you might be willing to let go of. And it's a way station or a purgatory. And if it stays there for a week and you haven't taken it back out, then it's definitely ready to go. And that's the beginning.
And Kristen, what's your strategy for attempting to declutter someone's apartment or their life, basically?
Well, I agree with everything Maxwell was saying about sort of spatial clutter and head clutter, because I do think they're kind of related. And the more you can clear the spatial clutter sometimes, the clearer your head feels, as strange as that might sound. But what I would advocate is, and I think this goes for people who live in small apartments and people who live in big houses, is when you look at the things around, you ask yourself, do I love it or do I need it?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't love it or need it, you really need to think twice about whether it belongs in your life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is the first step.
Okay, so if we were going to decide to kind of declutter our lives and we have certain areas of the house that have more stuff in them, should we attempt to, go into that closet that's just jam-packed with clothes, or should we start at the easy place, like maybe the kitchen table?
I would say start at the easy place. It's always better to start at the easy place. A closet is really overwhelming. If you start, as Maxwell alluded to, if you start with your kitchen counter and you see how good that feels, just clearing the kitchen counter, or the place in your house where you put the mail every day, mm-hmm. or some small space, part of your car. it will give you such a nice sense of accomplishment that I think you'll feel empowered to try something that's a little more overwhelming and really might require. Sometimes with a closet, it requires a complete rethink about where you're putting stuff, and that can be really hard.
And we're talking about homes right now, but also this kind of can play in the workplace as well. I'm actually looking out over Maxwell and I are looking through the glass at our newsroom here, and there's lots of desks and some
very
desks.
Neat. It's very neat.
So you have to get close up. So you have to go look at mine. But some of them have large piles of newspapers and other papers. What's the thing with piles?
Oh, wait. Okay, Maxwell, can I respond to
that? Yeah, please do, because I want to hear what you're going to say.
I'm a piler and I'm married to a spreader.
Yes.
And
that's what I was hoping
there
you were
is something, I think piles is kind of cheating, but a pile looks very neat, but it's not putting things away, it's putting things down. But I almost feel like if you don't have time to put away those newspapers, if you're looking at your colleagues' desks and you're seeing newspapers everywhere, and you want to get that little sort of cheating hit of a feeling of control, for me, a pile always works, but I don't think piles are a great long-term solution.
I
don't know, Maxwell.
Yeah,
I don't know if you feel that way.
I would agree. I think piles just allow spreaders to live longer.
But don't pile people kind of are a little bit organized? They can kind of find it. They can leaf through it.
No, I don't.
No.
I pile a little bit. No, it's burying stuff. But I think, particularly in workspaces, there are people who, in the course of the week, really, it's okay to have, let's say, a messy desk. A lot of people think that way. They work that way. It's fine. You should spread out. You know, creative people, studios, artist studios are messy. The thing is, you have to draw a boundary. And I always say, at the end of the week, on Friday, before you go home for the weekend, look at the piles and the spreading you've done, and clean it up so that That's your boundary for the week. Let it go in between, but then give yourself that day to bring it back to normal.
I'm Richard Haken. Today for Leonard Lopate, my guests are Kristen Van Ogtrop, managing editor of Real Simple, and Maxwell Gillingham Ryan, founder and CEO of ApartmentTherapy.com. We're talking about clutter, clutter in your home, clutter in the workplace. We'd like to hear from you as well. Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or on the show page at WNYC.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. What about a person who actually works at home? They have basically both of their lives, their work life and their home life, are in the same space. That must be a challenge for clutter.
That's the biggest challenge for clutter. And a lot of the clients I worked with when I started were working from home. And I think a lot of people now are working from home. Even people at Apartment Therapy, just the nature of working on the web, can work from home, and so half of our company does. And when you don't leave the space and you're doing all of that activity in one space and you're spreading and piling, it can be much worse. But the nice thing about working from home, and some of the people I work with say this too, they love being at home because they never – through the course of the day, they get to live a balanced life where they cook their meal, they do a little cleaning up, and then they do their work. And they can sort of repeat this sort of cycle. I think that's the best case scenario, but it can work really well.
And Kristen, what about for home workers?
I would think that you would have to, and Maxwell, you've got a lot more experience here than I do, but I would think you would have to carve out separate domains, right?
Dedicate an office space, you mean?
Yeah, well, no, if you work from home, at least to have one little space that is discreetly work. Mm-hmm.
That must be a challenge, though, in some of the smaller apartments here in New York.
Right, so how do you do that in a small apartment?
Well, what I say to people is that oftentimes they'll put their desk in a teeny tiny corner of their living room and cramp themselves in, and because they're afraid of ruining their apartment or something like that. But the truth is, they work from home. The work is what they love. They love their work. It's their livelihood. And I say, let's put the desk in the middle of the living room. Let's glorify your work. Let's give yourself what you deserve and make your space as big as you'd want it to be if you were in an office environment. And then what I find when you do that, when you release people, they're not as cramped in their thinking as they were in the space. They spread out a little bit, and it's obviously easier to maintain, because if you set up a desk at office or at home in a way that you can get to it, you can get to all sides, you have plenty of space to work in, you're going to be more likely to maintain it much better.
We have lots of callers seeking out your expert advice. Let's go to Elizabeth calling from Millburn, New Jersey. Elizabeth, welcome to WNYC.
Hello.
Or do you have a cluttered apartment, cluttered house?
It's not so much a cluttered house. I have little corners here and there where clutter builds up, and it's mostly because I have such a hard time. I'm good with throwing out the mail and keeping my workspace clear and things like that, but I have such a hard time throwing out the kids' things, you know, like the artwork and the drawings and the report cards and, you know, the reports and little poems that they all come home with. It's just, I have a corner in my dining room that's just been taken over by paintings and things of that nature.
Can I speak
sure.
to that? I have a 6-year-old, and so I'm familiar with this problem. I also taught elementary school for 7 years, so I'm familiar from a different angle. And the most important thing to remember about children is that when they make something, the pleasure and the enjoyment and what they want to share with you is the making of it. It is not the physical object itself as much as it is for adults. And so when you see a picture a year later that your 6-year-old did, it means far more to you than it does to them. And I think kids make so much stuff, and you want to keep them making stuff, that it's really important to sort of keep the walls clear, if you will, so that they're always feeling that there's enough room for them to make something and not get hung up in a way on the museum quality. What I do now is I put up stuff on the front door with the magnet and all of that, and when it fills up, I go to it often at night when she's asleep, and I will cull all the stuff that I feel is less worthy, and I quietly slip it into the garbage. I actually do that. And then the stuff that's really wonderful, I file it or I frame it. And in the end of the day, the stuff that's really wonderful is a small fraction of the overall amount that they make.
Okay, Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call. I'm speaking with Kristen Van Ogtrop, managing editor of Real Simple Magazine, and Maxwell Gillingham Ryan, the founder and CEO of Apartment Therapy and the author of several books, including Apartment Therapy, The 8-Step Home Cure. They're here to share tips and ideas for getting organized and decluttering your home, your desk, even your car. If you have a question, give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We'll be right back after a break. It's the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Richard Hake in for Leonard today. Our guests, Kristen Van Ogtrop, managing editor of Real Simple, and Maxwell Gillingham Ryan, founder and CEO of ApartmentTherapy.com and the author of Apartment Therapy, The 8-Step Home Cure. We're talking about clutter. And we have Dale on our Facebook page saying, I got the hall closet cleaned out when my other half is away for the day. Easier to organize when nobody is underfoot. I'd like to talk a little bit about closets and also the difference between men's and women's closets.
Go, Kristen.
Who wants to take that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Men don't have closets, first of all, as far as I can tell.
I do have closets. I don't know that I can speak to the difference between men's and women's closets because, again, I think that it really is an individual thing. But closets are sort of the piles of the home in a way. You can put things in a closet and not
really see it again. You don't see it again because you can close the door.
Right. Which you know, has its benefits. But, you know, the more you do that, the more you just make more work for yourself later. So but to the men and women thing, I don't know. I mean, I think there are men who have a lot of clothes who can't give up things, and I think there are women who are that way, and there are members of both sexes who are much more regimented about having pared down closets.
Maxwell, how do you make the most of a closet?
I take off the doors if I can. I find that a lot of closets, particularly in apartments or in homes that are where they have sliding doors or the accordion doors, mm-hmm. they're very hard to get you into the closet, and they often break. And so what happens is they'll stay in a position where you actually don't go into half the closet most of the time, and you just sort of always go in the right side. And that's the worst problem, because then you've not only, as Kristen said, created the worst pile problem, but you've put a sort of a cap on it. So what I did with clients is, in many cases, if the doors were a part of the problem, I would take them off, and I would do a curtain over the closet so that it was completely 100% accessible, and then I'd install lighting in the closet if it didn't have it already so that you could even turn on the lights and see the whole thing. Because if you can see the problem, you can deal with the problem.
And what if you don't have closets? You would say that that's a good thing.
Well, you know, in the old days, people had armoires and they had chests of drawers, and there were no such things as closets. It's a very modern thing. But I think you still have the same problem. You're going to have armoires, and you're going to need to hang your things somewhere. Everyone does. You need to put your shoes somewhere.
Well, speaking of that, Mike in Bushwick left a comment on our show page. I have a very small room, 8x10, but 11-foot ceilings with no closet space. How can I store my nicer clothes without sacrificing any of the limited space?
Kristen, you want to take that one?
Oh. Well, I actually think this is a Maxwell question, but you know, I mean, if you have a lot of space that goes up, I mean, but I don't know what his budget is. You could do, you know, some sort of cabinetry where you store things that you don't need frequently above you. I mean, that's what I would recommend, but Maxwell probably could do this in his sleep.
Yeah, certainly.
Well, thank you. I'm wide awake. So he doesn't have a closet. He has
an 8x10 room, but right. The ceilings are really tall, 11-foot ceilings. So why not go up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just jump right into. I'm a big fan of Elfa shelving. It's relatively affordable shelving system that you can get at the Container Store, and it can solve all of these problems because it attaches to the wall. It's modular. It can go up. It can go sideways. It can have shelves. It can have baskets. It can have rods that you hang on. And particularly if you're needing to do a DIY and not hire a cabinet maker to do a relatively expensive job, it's a great way of going up in this case.
And especially storing off-season clothes, that must be a big issue.
Yeah, and anything that's out of sight or out of reach is going to be unused. So if you're going to create a space like that, make sure that it's an off-season type of thing. It can work just fine. You just make sure you can get to it eventually. Otherwise, you never will.
Now, Ken from Brooklyn. Go ahead, Kristen.
No, there's something I want to add about clothes, because I think a lot of people have a problem. As everybody knows, the amount of stuff you have kind of expands to fill the space you have. Mm-hmm. But we should all be rigorous about getting rid of clothes if we don't wear them. So one tip you can do with your clothes in your closet is, if you hang all of your hangers facing in one direction, as say you're the typical person who changes their closet when warm weather comes, or cold weather, hang all of your clothes in your closet with the hangers facing in one direction, and as you wear an item, turn and you put it back in, turn the hanger the other way, and then by the end you can see what you've worn and what you haven't worn. And the things where you have never turned the hanger, you should consider donating.
I love that.
That's a great idea. And then, of course, there's the big justification. People always use this excuse, I think, is like, well, it's going to come back in style one day.
Oh, I know. It's the someday mentality. That's really a big part of the problem, is many of us, and I'm put myself at the top of this list, have the someday mentality. And you think, I can use this for something. It's maybe not going to be tomorrow, but it's going to be someday. And that's where I think you have to think about the freedom. You can't put a sort of a price tag on the amount of mental freedom you get, I think, by paring down sometimes.
Actually, Ken from Brooklyn is asking this right now on our website. How do you get rid of the things that you, quote, might need one day?
That's where the outbox is a huge, huge breakthrough. Because what I found when working with clients is when you try to get rid of something, and as Kristen said, there's the do I love it, do I need it thing. There's actually a second problem, which is what do I do with it? And if you put those two problems together, most people are paralyzed and they do nothing. But if you can say, do I love it, do I need it? Maybe not. And you can say, I'm just going to put it in the outbox for now, and I'm going to figure, I don't even have to worry about where it's going. That outbox, you can do this on a weekly basis. Then later on, what you find is the stuff that you put in it, it's like a rock. You know when you're on the beach and you find a rock in the water and it looks beautiful and it's all wet,
mm-hmm.
and then you take it home and it dries up and it doesn't look so pretty anymore?
Sure.
That's exactly what happens. Once you detach from it and you put it in the outbox for a week, you look at it, you go, boy, I don't even know why I thought I might love it or I might need it someday. It's easy to get rid of. There's no emotional attachment. And then solving what to do with it, whether it's to go to Goodwill or give it to a friend or whatnot, is much easier.
Let's go to a caller. John from Annandale, New Jersey, is on the line, and he's talking about something that I have a big problem throwing away as well. That is books.
Mm.
John, are you there?
Yeah, sure am. Just before I jump to books, just wanted to give a suggestion we did with our closet, though. We raised the clothing bar and put a second one in below the first one and doubled this space in our closet, basically. Because you know how there's the empty space underneath where things mm-hmm. just kind of accumulate. By raising the first one, we were able to put in the second and got to hang twice as many clothes. But, yeah, my real question is, I live in a world of clutter, and I love books, and I collect art books, which are big, and they are completely encroaching my world, and I've read every book on the subject, and I haven't found a solution yet to it. I wondered if you had any ideas.
Do you have books on the floor as well?
I do. I have stacks of them. I have books in front of books at this point.
And you love them.
I love them.
Go ahead, I'll wait.
No, I was going to say, I don't have a good answer for this question because I have a complete book bias, and my house probably looks like yours. but you know what? I justify by saying you look at decorating magazines and websites, and there are books everywhere in a lot of places, and they look really good.
Artfully placed, though. Artfully piled up, right?
Artfully piled, right.
That's the best solution. I think so, too. That sounds good so
far. But I'm sure Maxwell, you were starting to say something. I'm sure you have actually a real solution.
Well, I have some solutions, but I have sort of an approach, too, which is if it's something you really love, everyone has a collection, or most people have a collection that's not so much about clutter. It's more about, I've amassed this stuff because I love it. It's not the shoes in the closet problem. I mean, obviously there's some people who have shoes in their collection too, but you know what I mean? And I think if there is that thing, I had a client once who had a ton of baseball caps and he just loved them. And he couldn't even wear them all. He had so many, but he collected them. And my approach to him was, look, if you really love this and this is meaningful to you, then let's get it out of the closet. Let's make room for it. Let's make it more of a priority in your house. So to a certain extent, I'm with you. Keep the books. Let there be more of them than maybe other people might think is comfortable, and celebrate them. But just make sure that it's not stressing you out, because when it gets to the point of stressing you out, then even with a collection you love, some culling is probably in order.
It's time to go to the Strand. Sell them back.
Yeah. Because anyone who loves things probably always wants to acquire more. That just comes with the collector's mentality. And you can't comfortably collect more if you don't have some space. So I always say give yourself 10% empty space on a bookshelf just so you can get some more new stuff.
John, thank you so much for your call. And you were talking to Maxwell about seashells. Well, actually, we have a seashell collector, Liz, from Warren, New Jersey. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yes, actually, I have been decluttering for a while now, and I have piles of seashells, sea glass, and very fragile sand dollars, and from several people in the household. And I have shelf space and or wall space in a couple of bathrooms, and I'd like to display all of these that are accumulated from family vacations. So that's one of my questions. My other question, I just recently cleared a whole tabletop that had a bunch of framed family photos, and I thought it might be better, instead of having the clutter on the tabletop, to put those pictures up on the walls. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions on how to display family photos effectively.
Maxwell?
I think getting them off the table is a great idea. You can certainly hang them on the wall. You can do like a gallery. You can hang them in a group. And there's really no rule for how to do it. But the process for doing it is to lay them out on the floor first and get typically you take a bigger one and put it more towards the middle and hang the other ones in satellite around it. And once you get a pleasing a sort of assembly of your photographs on the floor, then you take them one by one and you move them to the wall. But you work it out. Don't work it out on the wall. That's you'll put too many holes in the wall and you won't be happy.
Great.
Does that help, Liz?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Nina calling from Brooklyn. Hi, Nina. You're on WNYC.
Hi. So I'm calling because I have a problem with drawers. It's kind of like closets, but I feel like I'll organize it, I'll get it all ready, and then I sort of get dressed. And no matter what I do, I turn around the next day, and it's completely destroyed.
Is that called a drawer jam? How do we go about drawers, Maxwell?
You have to describe this one more time to me, drawer problem.
Like I'll fold everything, right? It's all neat. I'll try to, like, find a way to organize it in such a fashion that when I'm looking in it, I can, like, see what I want to wear. Right. But, you know, I don't always know exactly what I'm going to pull out and what I'm going to be in the mood for. I might try a couple of different shirts with a couple of different pants, whatever it is. And then within 24 hours, whatever semblance of organization I had in any drawer is completely destroyed. And that goes for, like, anything. Anytime I feel like I have to find something in there, by the time I use it, I've ruined it.
Well, here's one tip. If you could you could take a part-time job at The Gap and get really good at folding. I have some friends who worked in retail. I'm not entirely kidding. I have some friends who worked in retail who are so good at folding clothes because they'd had to do it all day long, because people do that in retail stores. They take stuff off the shelf and throw it back. That helps. But there's another tip I learned recently. If it's a drawer, maybe it's underwear, maybe it's socks, maybe it's T-shirts, maybe not something too structured, if you roll them up and then store them on their end so that you can – it's like instead of –
So you could basically see them.
Instead of stacked, and this works really well for T-shirts and more casual stuff, instead of that, you look at them more like tubes on end, you can actually pull stuff in and out without creating that problem. I just saw that recently. I thought it was genius, and everyone on the website went crazy for it.
Nina, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead, Kristen.
Well, I would consider getting, and maybe you have already, some sort of drawer divider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can buy them in a store, or you can even make your own drawer divider if you sort of cut out the bottom of a shoebox, to make kind of compartments within the drawer. So you could put, you know, all your dark socks in one compartment and all your athletic socks in another compartment. And the other, another drawer problem sometimes is they're so dark that you can't, particularly if you're getting dressed early in the morning and the light's not great, and you can buy those little those little adhesive lights that you just press to turn on, you know, they're like little round discs. So sometimes if you adhere those kind of to the sides of your drawer, you'll see what you're doing. And that can also be a little bit motivating to try to keep it, you know, try to keep it looking good.
I'm Richard Hake. I'm in for Leonard Lopate, Kristen Van Ogtrop, managing editor of Real Simple, and Maxwell Gillingham Ryan, founder and CEO of ApartmentTherapy.com, are my guests. We're talking about clutter today. And I want to ask each of you if you want to fess up your own particular areas of clutter. Do you have any?
Oh, boy.
Well, Maxwell, you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I have to say, if you just walk into my apartment, I think you'd probably you'd be really clear of the laundry. I have a very small hamper because it's stylish, and I have a lot of laundry, and it just runs
so
over the top.
It's overflowing.
It's overflowing, yeah, and at least it's in one place, but it is something I've been thinking about. I have to do something about this.
Kristen, what part of your life do you need to declutter?
I have three kids, and so if you don't count them, they're a big source. I would say for me the big problem is where we put our mail every day. Mail, magazines. We have this one kind of counter where all that stuff goes, and it just becomes this black hole of you know, bills, school notices. And, it's something that it doesn't look great because it's in sort of a prominent area of my house, and I don't think we are disciplined enough to sort of take things out of there.
Whitney in Northern New Jersey asks, how do you deal with a spouse or partner who cannot part with things? That must be a tough one.
That's a tough one.
I think motivation works really well. I think you need a carrot on the end of the stick.
So not powered by example.
No, well, I've been married for 21 years. Power by example for me does not work. I think it's more a gentle, motivating, let me help you with this situation. I'm speaking about one particular relationship, which is mine, but I think power by example, if you're married to someone who holds on to stuff, they will ignore your example.
Yeah, and people have different ways of organizing their stuff because they have different fears and they have different loves. And so if you can, again, if you have the neat part spouse and the cluttery spouse, neither's wrong. They're just in a way we wouldn't be attracted to one another if we didn't like that sense of
opposites attract.
Yeah.
Right?
So I think that in order to work with your partner, I think you really need to understand why they do what they do. And with the example of that fellow with the baseball caps, he loved his baseball caps. They were falling out of his closet. And it, to his wife, it was just a mess and clutter. But to him, it was actually very important. And he was willing to give up other stuff if he could just salvage that collection. And so elevating it and taking it out of the closet was the solution. And he then let go of a lot of other stuff.
I think we have time for one more call. Genevieve calling from Brooklyn. Genevieve, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for taking my call. I recently renovated my apartment. And in so doing, it was like moved tons of boxes out into the hallway. And determined to throw many of them away. However, they're, you know, written documents I'm very attached to, like notes on Russian literature and letters. How would you get me to prioritize what to keep, what to get rid of? Is there any system?
For your notes, the very personal stuff, almost like school.
Written
stuff.
Things, you know, documents that you're never really going to need, but you can't seem, it's like the written word you can't seem to discard.
That's a tough one. You know, I have all of my notes from school still. Thankfully, it's only half of a bookshelf. I met a really interesting fellow a number of years ago who worked for Google, and his approach to this was scan everything. I mean, it seemed like a little much, but literally he lived a paperless life. And I don't know if you know about this about Google, but they don't like you to get rid of anything. They don't want you to throw anything out. They just want it to be all digital.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really feel strongly about that, it might be worth thinking about revisiting all your notes and actually looking at them again, opening them up and letting them see the light of day and scanning them and putting them in a place where they could be forever and not take up any room.
Thank you so much for your call. I've been speaking with Kristen Van Ogtrop, managing editor of Real Simple Magazine, and Maxwell Gillingham Ryan, the founder and CEO of Apartment Therapy and the author of several books, including Apartment Therapy, The 8-Step Home Cure. I want to thank both of you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.